Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to welcome back Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin. They are celebrating 101 years of business, and Dick's been with us many times on the show, and it's always a lot of fun, and it's rare. In fact, I can't remember the last time he was stumped on anything, so I'll tell you what, if you have a question and we're talking we can talk plants of all kinds today. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Dick, welcome back. Nice to have you with
us. Nice to be here, Larry.
And the business, have you noticed any changes in terms of ordering and things?
Yeah, we see a lot of people starting to put in gardens again. The vegetable seeds, the asparagus, strawberries, raspberries, the food type crops seem to be going very well this spring. I think people are feeling a pinch a little bit and putting in a few extra tomatoes or a little bit bigger garden so they can use it for produce later in the summer. I think a lot of people, too, use the garden as sort of a relaxation because it's really great to plant something and watch it grow. And, you know, I planted my garden last Saturday, so, you know, I start to see a few things peeking out of the ground now, and the tomato plants are starting to peek up a little bit. So, you know, with the rain that we've had now, the plant should start growing very well.
Well, Sean in Mountain, Wisconsin has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Sean. Sean, are you there? Wait, hold on a second. Now I've got you. Are you there, Sean?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I just have a question about my spirea bushes. I have several different kinds, and they seem to experience a lot of winter kill.
Okay.
And they are, like, leaved out really sporadically. So it's not like they're coming up from the bottom and leaving out. So it's kind of like all over.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I should cut them back to the ground or just...
Yeah, I would cut them back to maybe I'd cut them back to maybe 6 to 9 inches from the ground. That way, you're sure you've got live wood, and because there's a tremendous root system underground, by the middle of July, they'll be beautiful again.
Okay, and do those have like a lifespan of a certain amount of time, or are they just?
Spireas are really long lived. They last for a long time, but once in a while, they'll get nipped a little bit by the winter like this, and it's really hard to get in there and prune that dead wood out of there. So the best thing is to, rather than to try to just remove the dead wood, to just cut everything back to about 6 to 9 inches from the ground, and that way the new sprouts will come up, and then as they grow, you can prune them a little bit to shape them, and by the middle of summer, they'll look just fine.
You'll be a lot happier with the results.
Yeah, you will. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling. Gino in Waukesha, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm interested in growing some asparagus. I have a little plot. It's about a foot wide by maybe 10, 12 foot long.
Okay.
And I was wondering what I have to do to prepare the soil for that. You know, I could dig that out and put in any kind of soil. And how long would it be before I'd have asparagus I could eat?
Okay, what you want to do is there's really nothing you have to do to prepare the soil. You don't want to dig, especially if you've got clay, you don't want to dig all that soil out and then put black soil or really good soil in there because you're creating a pot. If you do want to amend the soil, what I recommend is if you've got clay or you've got sand, you take about half of the soil out and then you mix either compost or sand, some kind of medium that will make the soil a little mellower. And asparagus like to be planted deep. About 10 inches isn't too deep for them. And you just dig a trench with a shovel and you put the roots down at the base in the bottom of the hole and spread them out. And then you cover the crowns of the asparagus with about 2 inches of soil. And then fertilize it so it gets a good start. And then as the spears start to grow, you backfill the trench until it's even with the ground, never covering that growing tip. As far as the asparagus that you use, there are some new hybrids that, I say new, they've probably been on the market for 10 or 12 years, where the plants are basically male plants. And that way the energy of the plant isn't wasted making seed for no purpose at all. And as far as how long it takes, it depends on how you take care of them. If you water them and fertilize them and you use the hybrid plants, you may get a little bit next year, but usually it's 2 years before you see any. And the way that you tell when you start cutting, when the diameter of the stalks are about the diameter of your little finger, then there's enough carbohydrate in the root system that you can start cutting.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jolene in Ashland is up next. Hi, Jolene.
Hello.
Hi.
My question was about milkweed. I dug out a bed and planted swamp milkweed in there.
Okay.
And they grew like weeds for the first 2 years, and now I can't. I've repotted into there. Is the soil, is there something where they won't come back?
Yeah, milkweed doesn't like to be moved. You know, once you get it established, it really doesn't like to be moved. Did they winter kill? Is that the problem?
I don't know. I'm thinking.
Do you know what did you use, the Asclepias tuberosa, or which variety? Did you use a special variety?
Just a swamp milkweed that'll grow up here where it's real cold.
Okay, well, the orange-flowered native
one. No, white or pink.
White or pink.
The tall.
Yeah. I didn't bring my reference books along to see if those are less hardy than the regular native Asclepias. You know, that may be it. If you do plant them and get them going again, what I would suggest is using probably a 6 or an 8 inch mulch that you put over them for the wintertime, which keeps the freezing and thawing to be less of a problem.
Okay.
The other thing you don't want to do with perennials, especially ones that are a little bit tender, is fertilize them too late in the season. And you're probably better off planting them in the spring than the fall.
Okay.
Okay, I had one more question, if that's okay.
Sure.
I have variegated Arctic willow shrub,
okay.
And they tend to get real tall and leggy, just certain stems.
Right.
Is there a certain time I can cut them back and shape them, or can I do that anytime?
No, you can do that almost any time from the time they start growing until probably the middle of August.
Okay.
After that, you don't want to prune too heavily on things because then you're going to reverse the dormancy. The plant starts going dormant in mid-August, and if you prune it or stimulate it to do something after that, it really doesn't get its full complement of hardiness. So anytime with the willows, anytime from when they start to grow until mid-August, and then after the leaves drop, you can start hacking at them again.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Gail in Fort Atkinson, we're on to you now. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I also have an asparagus question.
Okay.
My question is, I planted some of Jung's asparagus about 15 years ago, and it's been doing just wonderful. I got the New Jersey mail.
Okay.
Now, the last couple of years, and especially this year, I'm getting all kinds of really skinny, tinny, lighty little shoots coming up real, real tall.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if some of the asparagus wasn't the male and has gone to seed, or should I be, and I should cut it out, or is this new plants that I should leave for a couple of years before it'll get big? I don't know what to do with these skinny little things.
Okay, well, if they're skinny, I wouldn't cut them because the diameter of the stalk is in direct proportion to the amount of carbohydrates that are under the ground. So, and the hybrids will have probably 5 to 10% female. So there is a possibility that some of them did go to seed. If you get some winter dieback too, if the crown is injured in some way, the shoots will tend to be thin. What I would do with an old bed like that, have you fertilized it lately?
Well, normally I do, but I buy it like from the farm co-op that 13-13-13 and put on there. But I'm just wondering if I should be putting something special on.
Well, if you're using a hot fertilizer like that, 13-13-13 has probably got a lot of nitrate nitrogen, and you can maybe get away with it on asparagus, but don't use that in your garden because it'll cause the plants to grow
too much.
And they won't go to fruit. So
what kind should I put on here?
I would use just a regular garden fertilizer, a 5-10-5 or a 5-10-10. Triple 8 is another one that works pretty good. But the thing you don't want to get is a lot of the nitrogen, which is readily available to the plant, and they actually kind of go nuts because there's so much extra nitrogen there that they just really grow like crazy.
Okay, so I should just leave these skinny little things.
Yeah, I wouldn't cut them because they have the potential.
Will they be edible then in a couple of years?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they'll probably develop more root system underground, and then they'll produce more next time.
Oh, okay. Thank you much.
Yep. Thanks, Gail, for calling. Jim in Rome, Wisconsin. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I've got a peonies plant. Every year it buds out nice. Get one or two flowers on it, and then the rest of the buds fall out. Now, I noticed there's ants on the buds, and I dusted for them, and they're gone. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. Or
is the peony in full sunlight?
Yes.
Okay. There are several things that cause peonies to abort the flowers. How old is this plant?
I bought the host about 4 years ago. I don't think it's more than 5 or 6 years old.
Okay. It may be planted too deep. So maybe in September, is it a large bush or is it a small bush?
It's medium size, medium large.
Okay, what I would do is in the fall, kind of, you can't do anything with it now because the plants are growing very rapidly now and you don't want to divide or try to move things. But if the crown of the plant is too deep, sometimes that will cause the peonies not to flower. What I would do is maybe in the fall move some of the soil away and see how deep the crown of the plant is. The crown should only be 1.5 to 2 inches below the surface of the soil. If they're deeper than that, they don't like it. The ants are not going to create a problem for them. They don't hurt nor do they help peonies at all. So that's not the problem.
Okay.
So, and then maybe give it a shot of like a superphosphate or something that has a small first number and a bigger second and third number. That might help them also. But
okay,
full sunlight is really important with peonies.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, talking with Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company, Randolph, Wisconsin. And Jim Packard taking your calls here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about your garden today with Dick Zondag of the Jung Seed Company. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's take a call from Pat in Marshfield next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I would like to know the best time to transplant a bleeding heart.
Okay, now is not a good time for any of the perennials, unless you absolutely have to. The best time for bleeding hearts would either be probably mid-October through the time it freezes up. I probably wouldn't do it much after the middle of November, or in early spring after the soil is thawed out and before the plants have started to grow. And with bleeding hearts, they have a large crown to them. What I would do is take a sharp shovel, a spade shovel, and just dig right down through the middle of the clump and dig half of the clump out and leave the other half there, especially if you want to leave some of it in that spot. And then the part that you take out, you can transplant somewhere else.
Okay. If I could ask one more, shrub for the northeast corner?
Very shady, in other words?
Yes.
There are... some of the viburnums will handle shade, some of the hydrangeas will handle shade, and there are two shrubs that handle shade really, really well. They're called snowberry and coralberry. They're symphoricarpus are the two, is the generic name of them. Those, I think, would have some benefit. You don't want to use anything that has colored leaves because the color is only expressed when it's in full sunlight. So maybe an American highbush cranberry. How tall did you want it to get?
About 6 feet at the most.
Okay, then the compact cranberry viburnum might be all right. The PG hydrangea might do well there, or the snowberry or the magic berry. Both are in that height range.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pat, for calling. Joyce in Menominee Falls, we're on to you now. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. I'd like to find out about how come my hosta plant is sending up the stems with the buds of flowers on them, and there are no leaves that are coming through the ground. Is it going to die, or what's going
to
happen?
It sounds to me like your plant is under a lot of stress. Plants, when they are either very starved for nutrients, or if there's too much water on the root system, or if they've got a root rot of some sort or another, want to go to their flower, because plants tend to go to their reproduction, their reproductive organs, when they're under stress. And it sounds to me like that plant is hurting for something. You may want to, have the soil tested to see if there's some soil problem there. Is it a well-drained area?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other thing you could do, too, is take a little bit of the soil away and check the crown to see if you've got some winter damage.
Okay.
And then I guess what I would do is just give it a shot of a well-balanced fertilizer, and probably something that you put in water so that it's immediately available to the plant, and then just wait and see what happens. But the excessive flowering like that, and especially this early, uh-huh, is usually a sign that plant is hurting for something.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Joyce, for calling. And Ron in Iowa County is up next. Hi, Ron. Ronnie, you there?
Yeah.
Hi, what can we do for you?
I've got a prairie flower bed that I'm building larger all the time.
Okay.
In my yard. Indian paintbrush, can that be grown in Wisconsin?
Yes. Yeah, wildflowers are not my real forte, but I think Indian paintbrush is a seedling, and it comes up, I think it's a biennial that you seed, and it has a rosette the first through the first winter, and then it flowers the second winter. But I could be all wet too.
I've seen Indian paintbrush.
Yeah, it grows very naturally in ditch banks and everywhere. So, and it's an orange type flower.
Correct. I've seen it when I was in Wyoming, and I found out it's their state flower. And it's like, well, it's a nice prairie flower, and I wanted to get it. But before I buy some plants, I wanted to find out if it was hardy.
Yeah, it's very hardy. And
you see a lot of it along the roadsides in northern Wisconsin in particular.
And okay. I think, if you can find an area that has it, you can collect the seeds, and it's quite easily just planted. You just spread the seeds over the ground probably in mid-August, and then it'll go to a rosette, and then next summer you'll have the Indian paintbrush seeds or plants.
All right, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Ron. Debbie and Marshall, your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Okay, I just discovered on my Mugo pines a small green worms with a black head or tail, and they seem to be defoliating each stalk of the Mugo.
The pine shoot moth, I'm pretty sure.
Pine shoot moth? Because that Jung's last night in some prairie thought it was maybe a the sawfly.
Could be that, too. I haven't got my book here. I know what I would have told you 5 years ago, but so many of the pesticides have changed and are no longer available.
Would it make a difference between one or the other, the sawfly?
No, both of them would be susceptible to the same thing. I know we have a product called 8. It's EIGHT, the number 8.
Yes, that's what they gave me. It was a spray.
And that would probably be the pesticide that I would use. A lot of the pesticides that we have now are the synthetic pyrethroids. And, the thing that I would have recommended 5 years ago is diazinon. That would have taken care of it right away. But diazinon is gone, and most of the pesticides that we've used in the past are gone now, either because they weren't re-registered or because they had some other problems. But 8 is the problem, is the chemical, I think, that I would use on them. And just follow the label directions. I think you use it like every week to 10 days for three treatments, and that should help you with that.
So will they ever go away, or is this something that
they're a moth that lays the eggs, and the eggs hatch into these things that you've got on your plant right now, the caterpillars, and they feed on the foliage, and they then go into their adult state and spread some more.
Start all over again.
Another thing that you could try earlier in the season, I don't know if the growth has started on them yet, but a good dormant spray, the oil and lime sulfur that would kind of suffocate them. So if you haven't got a lot of new growth on that plant, maybe the dormant spray would work on them also, because that oil and lime sulfur is kind of like a house cleaning of both disease and insects. So that might be another alternative too.
Okay, will they spread to, I just planted some spruce nuts, which are in the vicinity of these, but not right next to them
or
anything?
Some spruce? I don't think they're, the spruce is a host plant. I think it's more the pines that they chew on.
Okay, because I checked my white pine and my Australian black pine,
mm-hmm.
and they are farther away than the Mugos are.
Right.
But will they go to spireas?
No, I think that they are basically on pines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Okay, I guess I just wanted to know if the spray is going to do it or we need to pull them out. I did cut off some of the stalks really cluttered up.
Yeah, if you've got real bad infestations on certain areas, that's what I would do. And then put them in a plastic bag and either burn them. I know you're not supposed to throw that stuff in the garbage, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be hidden, I guess. I don't know. Okay. Maybe I shouldn't say that on the radio,
calendar.
Right? But you've got to get rid of them because they can go through a couple of life cycles in a summer's time. So,
okay.
You know, if the plants haven't started to grow, and I don't think I've seen the candles on Mugos start to grow.
Mine are coming up.
They are. Okay, well, then it's too late for the dormant spray.
But okay,
maybe
is that
in the
dormant
next,
oil?
Yeah, oil okay. and lime sulfur is what it is.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Debbie, for calling. And we'll go to Sean in West Bend next. Hi, Sean.
Hey, good morning. Great topics. Very informative this morning.
Thank you.
I have a question on the best fertilizer for growing some of these huge mammoth pumpkins.
Okay.
I've heard anything from powdered milk mixed with water and injected right into the ground, sprinkle the powdered milk on the soil above the roots. What would be your take on something to give these things a boost and make them grow?
Yeah, everybody has their secret for giant pumpkins.
Well, tell me some.
You know? Well, I can tell you what the secret of getting the flower buds. You want to pick the third to the fifth flower that comes on that vine. The first three you'd pick off,
okay.
And then either the fourth.
Is it on the vine now, or you let them get three and five? Flowers and then you pick them, or
no? What you do is you let the vine grow.
Okay.
And the fourth, fifth, or sixth bud are the one of those you want to leave. Whatever
okay.
one starts to grow the best. And what I do with vine crops is you want to fertilize them with just a regular fertilizer to get them to grow, because you want to get the vines to grow, because the more leaf surface you have, the bigger that fruit is going to be. And then
okay.
only leave one. Pumpkin per vine, because then the whole vine is throwing everything it has into the fruit. The other thing you want to do too is, as the vine grows, maybe three or four places along the vine, you want to put a shovel full of soil over the vine where one of the leaves come out. And what happens then is the tendril that's on the bottom side of that vine will differentiate into a new root system. And so you'll have a vine with three or four root systems on, which will make that vine grow even faster, and which will also make the pumpkin get bigger.
Okay.
Okay? And so, you know, fertilize it right now to get it growing, because you want to get it out of the ground fast, third or fourth, or fourth, fifth, or sixth a bud, and then cover the vine in several spots. It also helps if you get a vine borer in the thing that it won't kill the vine, so...
Is there such a thing as, and I'm sure there probably is, but over-fertilizing where you could burn
it? Oh, yes.
It?
Yeah, you don't want to use a high-nitrogen fertilizer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
With any of the vegetables except the ones that you're eating the
fruit,
the vegetative part of the plant,
okay.
like asparagus, you don't want to use a high-nitrogen fertilizer. But that initial fertilization of the vines to get them growing can have a little bit more nitrogen in them. Because you want to get it going, and what happens then is the nitrate will leach away from the plant. So initially you want to give it a jolt to get it going, but then don't use it again, because it actually, using too much nitrogen on vine crops can get the flowers to abort even. So if you
do use a commercial product such as, like, I don't know if I can say it or not, but like Miracle-Gro.
Right.
and that I would delete that if you want.
Yeah,
or whatever,
I would use that one time, you know, just to get the thing growing, and then go to a product like Rooting and Blooming, which has a much lower first number on it than second and third. And the other thing too is to keep the to keep the vine watered, because when a vine crop when the soil gets dry around the root system, the plant shuts down. So you want to keep an even amount of watering, but you don't want to water too much, because if you water too much, you get root rot. So you've got to hit that field moisture capacity and keep that plant as happy as possible by watering it like every 4 or 5 days. If you've got a sandy soil, I don't know what type of soil you have, but if you've got a heavier soil, maybe once a week, give it a shot of water so that the soil doesn't dry out. And in that way, you know, if the plant is happy and it's growing and it's photosynthesizing, and, you know, that's the way you get the big pumpkins.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. I look forward to a couple of 100-pounders this year.
Okay, Sean. Yeah. Let us know. Thanks a lot for calling. Jerry in New Auburn, it's your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Okay. I was just coming back from town earlier here, and I heard the guy call in about the peonies with the ants on it.
Right. Yep.
And he's been dusting for ants. Well, your ants are essential to the peony on the buds. If you don't have ants on your peonies, you won't have flowers, because they eat the sap along the seams of the buds that keep the bud from opening.
Okay.
And so if you have ants on your peonies, you'll have flowers.
You should have flowers. Well, they're certainly not going to hurt the peonies.
No, there's no harmful thing. I mean, they're not carrying disease or anything. And, you know, we have fields and fields of peonies, and I don't know that they have, all of them have ants on them, and they flower pretty good. But, yeah, I know that ants are not a inhibitory or a problem with peonies, but yeah, there's no reason to try to treat the plants to keep the ants away.
No, not at all. Jerry, thank you very much. We'll give some others a chance to join in here. Herb in Wales is up next. Herb, hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. Question about putting tomatoes in containers.
Okay.
In my garden. Due to the fact that I have no other place to put them, and over the years I've developed disease problems in that same plot. Hence, I'm thinking, can I successfully have a good yield putting them in containers? And if such, could I put them in that same place and put, like, black plastic down to keep the disease and everything else from the soil bouncing up on the plant? And if I do that, what soil medium would be best beneficial, and what size container would be would you suggest?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we've got about a half a dozen questions in one call. It depends on the disease that you're talking about. Now, there are root rot diseases, the verticillium and the fusarium wilt, that's carried over in the soil. And if you've got the root diseases in the soil, you've got to look and read the catalog, and a lot of them will tell you whether they're verticillium fusarium resistant. And that's the little letters after the name. It'll say VFM. You know, verticillium, fusarium, mosaic. And so if they've got that resistance, you've got that disease, you've got to have a plant that's that resistant to it. That's another reason that you rotate where you plant your tomatoes in a garden. So that's the soil disease problem. They also are very susceptible to early and late blight, which is a leaf problem. And so with that, you want to make sure that the leaves are well ventilated so you keep the dew off from them. As far as putting them in a pot, you want to use just a really good potting soil. If you make your own potting soil, a third sand, a third peat moss, and to that you add some type of balanced fertilizer. And if you're going to grow them in pots, and if you have soil disease problems, you have to change the soil and soak the pot in a Clorox 1-10 solution to sterilize the pot. The tomatoes can grow almost anywhere. I mean, we have a product that we sell called a Topsy Turvy, where you plant a tomato in the bottom of this hanging plastic bag. It's basically what it is, and the tomato comes out of the bottom and then kind of grows up. because, of course, the geotropism wants the plant wants to grow up and the tomatoes come
out. It's really pretty.
No, those things can weigh 50, 60 pounds by the time you get done. Yeah. So tomatoes will grow almost anywhere. It's just if you've got disease problems, you've got to either have resistant plants to it or you have to avoid them somehow. Right. Does that answer your question?
Well, yeah. Well, number one, I just raised the Brandywine tomatoes. I make a nice, decent salsa with them.
Right.
So I'm not so sure. I buy all these seeds from you, and right. I have to give you kudos, too, for your Burwood roses. They're just spectacular.
Well, good.
But over the years. You say they'll grow anywhere. I plan on, using a good soil medium, but I'm thinking not as much peat moss because it would tend to dry the pot out on the outside during the hot
weather.
Right. Well,
you have to have some organic matter in there to hold the soil. Now, Brandywine is not, Brandywine is an old heirloom variety.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have much disease resistance. So if you've got soil problems, Brandywine is not a variety to use. But, Brandywine has been... has been called the most flavorful tomato there is, but it's not the most beautiful tomato you'll
have.
No.
We use it for salsa, and the flavor is spectacular, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, but how about the size of would a gallon pot be sufficient for plant?
Probably not.
No,
I would probably go with a 3-gallon as a minimum.
Yeah, 3-gallon. Okay,
right.
I've got a bunch of
there.
I don't want to be making too much more soil up than I had. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yep, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. Yeah, 3 gallon would be about what we've got.
Yeah, and if you wanted to use a gallon container, you could grow like the patio-type tomatoes where you're not getting a huge vine where it's kind of a determinant, where it just grows about 1.5 feet tall. That would probably work, but for a Brandywine, that gets to be a huge plant. I think a 3-gallon would be a minimum.
Susan in Shell Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hi. We have some poison ivy to kill on a lakeshore lot.
Okay.
And quite a lot of it, and wondered if there's something that will kill it that will not harm the lake and that would perhaps be specific to the poison ivy so it doesn't kill off the rest of the vegetation.
Boy. We have products that we sell that are brush killers, and I'm not sure what the chemical is in them, but poison ivy is a really rough one. I guess what I would do is just consult with the county agent in the area.
Okay.
I said, I haven't got my books in front of me here that I can tell you what herbicide to use on them. I don't think Roundup would work very well because poison ivy has a very waxy leaf and it would probably beat up and just dry off. And it's going to be difficult to control the poison ivy without controlling the other things. You'd have to use a pesticide that's very non-selective.
Mm-hmm.
My email address is dick@junkseed.com, and if you want to email me, I can look something up, see if I can find something specific for poison ivy. If you do that, I have a spam box because I get literally hundreds of emails a day that go into that box. Just put poison ivy in the subject, and I'll recognize it then.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Susan. Jack in Eagle River, we're on to you now. Hi, Jack.
Good morning. One of my favorite subjects this time of year is asparagus.
Yeah. Okay.
And we live up north, as you might suspect, in Eagle River, and I think we're about in zone 3.5 or something like that. So my question is, we've just started to learn about asparagus, and I get different answers to this question. When do you stop picking it?
You stop picking it, I would say, well, first off, when stalks start to get a little bit woody. For your area, I would think probably the last week in June is probably the last time I would cut it, because it still may be good after that, but you've got to give that plant a chance to replenish the carbohydrates that it's putting back into the root system, because, those asparagus spears don't grow because there's nothing in the root system. You have to get those fronds, the fern part of it, growing again and working through the summer and the fall to replenish the energy that you took by cutting off the spears that you're eating. So I would say if you cut through maybe the last week in June your plants would be just fine. And then what I would do when you're done cutting is give them a little fertilizer and a little water to encourage the sprouts that you're going to let grow. But if you keep cutting them too long, especially when you're that far north, you may get winter damage on them.
Well, now, in the off-season, let's say in the fall, can you just flop them and let them, you don't have to pull them out, do you?
In fact, it's probably better if you don't do anything to them because they'll catch snow that way, and snow will be a good mulch. Only time that you would cut them back is if you're using some of the older varieties, maybe the first 2 or 3 years, and when the berries start to go from red to black, it means that they're using a lot of the sugars to make that seed, and you want to cut it off, or either that or just take your hand and strip all the berries off so that it's not putting anything into the fruit.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Jack. Vern in Appleton, on to you now. Hi, Vern.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'd like to ask about daffodils.
Okay.
About 3 years ago, I planted one or two bulbs, and I've always had nice flowers. But this year I only had one.
Okay.
Now, this fall I'm going to dig them up and separate them. They're getting kind of thick.
Okay.
But I was wondering why. You see them growing along along the road, and they're so thick that you can't hardly walk through them or anything, you know? Well, I just wondered why would I only get one bloom?
I think what you're seeing along the roadside are daylilies, not daffodils.
Oh.
The leaves look somewhat similar. Daffodil leaves will only last probably through the middle of June, and then they disappear.
Yeah.
And probably what's happening is that the plants need to be separated. Now, one of the secrets with, well, it's not a secret, but one of the things you want to do with daffodils is plant them deep, 10 to 12 inches, because that way the bulbs don't divide and separate. Because if they divide real a lot, the smaller bulbs tend not to flower until they get bigger. So what you're doing is right. When the tops die back, you want to dig the bulbs up and separate them and put them farther apart, but also put them deeper. And that way the bulb will tend to stay bigger for a longer period of time without shattering, without multiplying, and that way you'll have flowers for a longer period of time.
I see. Well, I'm going to spread them. Just spread them out. There's right along the road.
Right.
The street.
But you wanna...
I have one quick question about asparagus, too, that I didn't tell Jim about.
Okay.
Could I ask it?
Sure.
Why does wild asparagus taste better than domestic?
Because you have to walk a long distance to cut it, I guess. I don't know. The wild asparagus is kind of like the old Mary Washington asparagus that we still have. I mean, that asparagus, I think if I went back into the old catalogs we have, has probably been around for 70, 80 years.
Boy.
You know, it's an old standby. But as far as the taste is concerned, boy,
I mean, I don't know.
Maybe you're hungry for it and it tastes better because you had to walk a long distance for it. I have no idea.
Thanks, Vern. Thanks a lot for calling. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin, celebrating 101 years in business. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking gardening with Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company, Randolph, Wisconsin. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And we'll turn next to Fran in Sauk City. Hi, Fran.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Dick.
Hi.
I've been really enjoying the show. So many answers to different questions I had. Mine is about a flower that I discovered 7 years ago, the heliotrope.
Okay.
We loved it. It bloomed so long.
Yeah, it's an annual that really does a very nice job.
Oh, it is just wonderful. And last year, of course, at Jung's, we get our plants, and they, again this year, they're beautiful. But we had a loss after about three or four weeks. They just, like a blight or something.
Hmm.
And one of the clerks at your store said she had lost some, and she thought it was a blight. Now, is that true? And, you know, I mean, are they susceptible to a blight? And if so, should I change the soil in my pot?
Okay.
Or should I do something, put something on them.
I guess what I would do is make sure that they like full sunlight. So that's the first thing you have to have them.
Right.
And they should get morning, they should have morning sun so that the dew dries off right away, because that's how the disease things get started.
Mm-hmm.
I would not plant them too thick. I mean, you want to have an airy, so that air can circulate around them. As far as specific diseases that would bother them, I'm not sure. Can you describe the symptoms to me?
They would just dry up.
They just dry up.
Yeah.
Well, then it sounds to me like it's a root rot problem rather than a foliar disease. Do you change the soil in the pots?
Well, we did this year.
Okay. And you've got a hole in the bottom of the pot so the excess water can drain out?
Yes.
Okay. The soil that you're using is sort of a loose soil?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We use Miracle-Gro on them periodically. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, with annuals, you want to use fertilizer in the water maybe every second or every third week, because you want to keep those annuals growing. And the other thing you want to do is cut the dead flowers off, because as long as you keep the dead flowers off, they keep throwing new flowers. Again, I don't have my reference books in front of me to see if there's anything specific for heliotrope. Do you have access to the Internet?
Yes.
Okay, dick@jungseed.com, and just put heliotrope in the subject line, and I'll see if I can find something that's specific for that. The only thing I can tell you is, the soil, when you're watering a container, you want to water it heavy and let it dry out between watering so that the soil isn't wet all the time, because root rots become a problem when they're in the soil pores are plugged up with water all the time. But specific things that would bother it, I'm kind of at a loss. I'm losing it, Larry. But just email me, and I'll see what I can find out for you.
I will do that, Dick, and thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah, thanks for calling, Fran.
I think you jinxed me today, Larry, when you told me you said that.
Oh, man. Amy in La Crosse, what's on your mind?
Well, I seem to have, I think it's called stinging nettle in my yard, and I have a toddler, so that's my main concern. But where it's growing is right where I just got clematis to grow for the first time. And there are also some irises and hostas around here. Is it best just to try and trim the plant down and then try and get the root out?
I guess what I would do is we have a herbicide called Roundup, which is an excellent non-selective herbicide. What you want to do, though, is put it on a paintbrush and just paint it on the nettle's leaves. And it takes about a week to 10 days for the Roundup to kill the plant. But a Roundup will actually go down into the root system and take the plant out. But you don't want to get it on the plants that you have planted around there, like the clematis or whatever else you want. So I would just put it on a paintbrush or something where you can apply it selectively to that, to the stinging nettles and not to the other. And it doesn't volatilize. Whatever hits the ground is deactivated. But some people will put on a rubber glove and then a cloth glove over it and then just dip their hand in the Roundup, and then they just kind of take the weed and pull the weed through the glove, and the Roundup is applied that way. And that usually works pretty good on problem weeds where you want to be selective. I mean, in my strawberry bed, and maybe I shouldn't talk this way either, but the weeds that are above the strawberries, if you just paint it on those, especially if it's a grass or something, it's really hard to control in strawberries. It'll take the grass out too. So,
all right.
But you have to be really careful with Roundup because it is non-selective. It'll kill whatever it touches, or pretty much everything it touches. So you've got to selectively apply it to the things that you want to take out and not to the things that you want to save.
So if these leaves are touching, like the irises, then I shouldn't put it on those leaves?
No.
Okay, and how much of the plant's leaves would you have to cover with
Not a whole lot, because it's translocated. It moves in the plant. It's a glycosate. Well, it's glycosate. It's a lysine, I think, replacement. It screws up the proteins in the plant, and they turn a beautiful brown.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Amy. Janice in Minneapolis, your turn. Hi, Janice.
Hi. I had transplanted some ferns, and they're just beautiful. They filled up the north side of the house. Now they're in the back, in the areas where there's a little bit of shade. And they have been sending up shoots, so I have some now that are kind of getting out of the boundary.
Okay.
And I just wondered what time of year should those be, you know, moved, or should I wanted to give some to my daughter-in-law, Sherry, and I thought, well, is it spring or fall? You know, when I dug them up, I don't even remember if I did it in the spring or fall for my mom.
They can be transplanted in late September through the fall, and then in the springtime before the fronds start to come out. So
they're pretty hardy.
Yeah, and they're pretty hard to kill, too. I mean, I had cinnamon fern growing around my house for about 10 years before I finally got it under control. But, yeah, okay. ferns are actually pretty tough plants. And, you know, if with the offsets that come off, you can, as they're growing, you can almost just take those off any time and move them.
Okay, now that they're budded out, you know, they're actually, once they came to a head, they were open so quickly, I could still move them?
Yeah, I think you have a reasonable chance of a higher probability of those moving than most perennials. So just take a sharp shovel and cut the offset off and take some soil with it, too. I know the soil doesn't stick very well to most ferns, but if you can take some soil with it and then put them in a pot and then move them, they would be fine.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Janice. Keith in River Falls, on to you now. Hi, Keith.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I'm interested in talking about grapes.
Okay.
And what varieties you might recommend.
Okay, for northern Wisconsin.
Well, River Falls is...
yeah, I know it's up around...
the Twin Cities.
Twin Cities, yeah. The varieties, I guess, that I would recommend, if you want a purple grape, I would use Fredonia. The problem with most grapes is the amount of heat that we get in the summertime is the determining factor as to whether you're going to have good fruit or not. Concord is too late for your area, although we sell a lot of Concords. Even in the Randolph area, maybe 3 out of 5 years, we're going to have good fruit. The other, we get a hard frost early. The fruit, I mean, it turns purple and it looks nice, but it never gets real sweet. Hmm. So Fredonia would be one variety that I would use. That one is about 2 weeks earlier than Concord. Edelweiss is a white grape that does pretty well in a northern climate. King of the North is a variety that actually Dr. Klingbeil from the University of Wisconsin showed us, and it was on an old barn. And the guy made wine out of it, and it was just one huge vine. And so we took cuttings and started growing it, and we called it King of the North. And so that's another one that probably would be a good one, especially for wine.
And so, the other question I would have about grapes is it too late to plant them this season?
No, but you've got to do it in the next couple of weeks. In fact, before I was... before I came into the show, I was down in the nursery area filling Beirut orders because we're, you know, it seems like every year people order later and later and later, and we actually were done shipping our back orders really early this year. Now we've got a late influx of orders, so I was actually down filling orders this morning myself. So, no, I would say we have enough supply for another couple of weeks, but the quicker you get it in now, the better. I mean, with Beirut products, you want to get them in actually in mid-April is actually the best time to do it. But
yeah,
with, you know, soaking the roots for 24 hours and then planting it and keeping the soil moist around the plant for a week to 10 days, grapes should do fairly well yet.
And so, okay.
All right.
Is there any particular nutrient that grapes need that...
No, not really. Grapes are not heavy feeders. They're not like asparagus or rhubarb or some of those things where they like to feed... grapes have a tremendous root system, and they tend to get the things that they need. It doesn't hurt to give them a well-balanced, just regular garden fertilizer in the springtime, but grapes are not heavy feeders.
All right.
All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. And Bill in Waupaca, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Morning. What can we do for you?
Quick question about peppers, specifically bell peppers.
Okay.
I had met a gentleman years ago, and I forgot what he told me, but I think he said, like, spread would it be boric acid around the plants? Would that be a possibility?
Boric acid would be fine. Peppers like to have an acidic soil. What I do with my peppers is I just take a book of matches and I drop three or four matches in the hole with the pepper plants, and the sulfur from the matches makes the soil a little bit sour, and the peppers like that. So anything that would make the soil a little bit sour, the iron sulfate, elemental sulfur, maybe a little aluminum sulfate, anything like that will make your peppers grow a little bit better.
All right.
You say several matches. You talking like out of a book? You talking farmer style matches?
Yeah.
Or what?
Just matches out of a book.
Yeah, they have sulfur in them. You know, that's what burns when you strike them. It's a mixture of sulfur and something else, I guess.
Three or four matches, and that's the simple way to do it.
Yep, just drop them right in the hole. Not the burned matches, the matches before they're burned, because the sulfur disappears when you burn them. But, yeah, I just drop a few matches in the hole with the plants when I put the plants in, and they do just fine.
And thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Appreciate it. Dick Zondag, our guest today, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest today, Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin. They are celebrating 101 years in business. Really pleased to have him along today, and we're having a great time. And I know we have questions coming up about onions, about hostas, about honeysuckles and evergreens. Acurea shrub is another question coming up. And I bet you might have a question as well. And it could be about the flowers, or maybe it's about the vegetables, or about bushes, whatever that question, or trees. Give us a call. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Back after the news. Talking all things gardening today with Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company, Randolph, Wisconsin, celebrating 101 years in business. You know, they've 8 million? How many catalogs you mail out every year?
It's between the nine different titles that we currently own. It's a little over, about 8 million.
Oh.
sort of like that. it takes a lot of trees, at least.
Takes a lot of, and five garden centers in the south and central parts of the state, too.
That's true, yep.
Well, Rick in Burnhamwood has a question for you, so let's go to Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
What can we do?
I was wondering why my onion plants always are staying so small, and I tried different varieties of onion, and I got a little bit of clay soil. I don't know, is it because the clay gets too hard that they can't grow underground, or
no.
How does that work?
The big thing with onions is they do, one of the few vegetables in the garden that will respond to some extra fertilizer. So what I would do is side dress the row, and you've got to use a regular garden fertilizer, 5-10-5 or 5-10-10, something that's not too high in nitrogen, because otherwise the plant will all go to tops. And the other thing, you've got to keep them watered, and you've got to keep the weeds out of them, because onions have such a small root system, they don't compete well. The other thing you got to do is get your plants in early. I mean, you can plant onion plants in mid-April. They will take small frosts, because most of the plant is underground at that time anyway. And even if the tops get singed a little bit, they'll regrow the tops and away they go. But they need to establish that root system in the very early spring, and then away they go.
All right. Thank you very much, Rick. Appreciate it. Dan and Two Rivers, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I have a question on hostas. I have a small flower garden, and I have a couple kinds of hostas. One of the plants that I have, every year the edges get brown and curl up.
Okay.
Is it a disease, or?
It could be a nutrient deficiency. It seems to me that boron is one of the things that hostas, so a little bit of 20 mule team borax, maybe dressed around. Are they in the full sunlight?
These are, yes.
Yeah, see, and that's
one
another
plant
thing.
Does well, and the other one always
curls up. And
yeah, the varieties will vary in how they will handle sunlight. Hostas are actually shade plants. It's not a hard and fast rule, but the green and the white and green variegated tend to like the sun a little bit better, or handle the sun a little bit better than the blue or the yellow varieties. So if it's a yellow variegated or a blue variety, it probably means that you're giving them too much sunlight.
Okay, this is it's light green leaves with a cream edge.
Yeah. It may be that it's not a variety that's suited for the shade.
Okay.
I mean, for the sunlight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
So, okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Sharon in Wheatland, it's your turn now. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I have a question about honeysuckles. They're in bloom now in southeast Wisconsin, and I want to know if there are certain kinds of honeysuckle that bloom longer or later in the summer than others.
Now, are you talking about the perennial honeysuckle?
Yes.
The columbine?
I don't know exactly. I see them on somebody's property, and they're blooming every year, so I'm assuming they're perennial.
Yes, they are. There are bushes that are called honeysuckles, too, but I think what you're talking about are the perennial columbines. And columbines will blossom probably anytime from now until early July, depending on where they're planted and what varieties you use. Perennials tend to flower in one season. It's very seldom that you find a perennial. In fact, I don't know of any perennials that blossom all summer long. They tend to be either spring, summer, or fall flowering. And the columbines tend to be the mid-spring to early summer flowering, and then they turn to green plants. So the McKenna's hybrids are the ones that get the tallest and have the biggest flowers, but there are also the blue butterfly. There are other varieties that are a little bit smaller than that. But
I'm more interested in the fragrance.
Okay. I would think that you know, as you get old, you forget all this stuff. But columbines, I didn't think had that much fragrance to them.
All
flowers have some fragrance, but I don't think columbines are ones that have.
They're not like a lilac or
something. No, they don't. But the McKenna hybrid, I know, is one that gets the biggest flowers.
Okay.
Okay.
I have a question about the
origami.
Origami?
Larry handed me a catalog. Origami is the newer one, and that's the smaller flowering one and does flower over a longer period of time.
Okay, good. Another question about pines. We had a tornado come through and knock down some of our 20-foot pine trees, Austrian pines and blue spruce, and I was surprised to see how shallow the roots were. So are there any pine trees that have longer roots?
Deeper roots?
Deeper,
no.
Deeper roots?
No. Pine trees tend to be very shallow-rooted.
Oh.
In fact, most plants, even the trees, unless it's a tap-rooted tree, the roots tend to be probably in the upper 3 feet of soil.
Yeah.
And so if you get a lot of water in the soil, so the soil is saturated, and then you get heavy winds, all you got to do is have one tree tip over, and then they all kind of fall over because they're all kind of hooked together.
Intermingled.
Yeah. So. And pines and maples are also very shallow-rooted, but they do have a shallow root system.
Okay, so can't avoid it then.
Nope.
All right, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Sharon. Let's go to another Sharon in Shatek this time. Hi, Sharon.
Good morning.
Morning.
Always enjoy this program.
Thank you.
If the pine trees are short, 4, 5, 6 feet, tip them back up and they'll continue to grow. My grandpa did that with ours.
Sure.
My comment, however, is about tomatoes and poison ivy, and Roundup does make a special spray for poison ivy, and I use it along my woodland here that's right by my yard. I had a prolific crop, and it took care of it. It's just starting to come back, so it does take care of it. You have to give it ample amounts.
Right, and I think with if you're using Roundup, probably if they make a special preparation, it has a surfactant in it because the Poison ivy has a very waxy leaf, and you have to have something that will stick to the leaf. So
well, it says for poison ivy right on the label, and it's a little more expensive than the other regular one. Tomatoes in buckets, I've had to do it for 5 years, and I use a huge bucket. It's probably 2 bushels. And I plant them, you know, and then keep piling the earth up so they grow roots up until I decide that's as much as I need, and then let them grow. But and I've had really good luck with the yield. But you do have to change soil every year.
Right, because the disease can build up in the soil. The other thing with some people that grow them in pots, they tend to put a cage around the pot, too, and that way the plant grows up in the cage, and you have less problems.
You do have to do that, because they'll get 4 or 5 feet tall.
Sure, yep.
All right, thanks, Sharon.
That's my words of wisdom for this morning. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Let's see what Bonnie's got to say in Sister Bay. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a curia. It's a New Guinea, Golden Guinea curia, and the winter was really hard on it, and we only have one of the twiggy branches that has blossoms on it, but it's green down at the base, about 6 inches high. Can I go ahead and just cut that back down to the top of those flowering leaves?
Yes, that's what I would do with it. That way it'll bush out and it'll grow better that way, rather than having one big one and the rest down at the base. Plants will recover very rapidly, because if it's got a good root system underneath it, if you cut the tops back, it's going to throw all its energy into those new sprouts that are being sprouted.
Okay, so I can cut it back at this time of the year.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep.
Do you have time for one more question?
Sure.
Hostas and slugs?
Yep.
We're in an area that's fairly wooded, but open around the house. I have a lot of hostas in a lot of different places. I've tried eggshells. That didn't seem to help much.
Okay.
And I have put the little, like the bottoms of juice cans down into the dirt, so it's kind of with the surface, and put beer in. And, of course, that works well, except that I have so many hosta plants. Then I've tried some little pellets, but they get to be very expensive when you buy them by the, I don't know, quart or 2 quarts or whatever the container size was. Can you buy those in huge quantities, or is there something else I can do?
Yeah, they do come in bigger quantities. The bait really works the best. And what you do is you put the bait underneath the leaves.
Yeah.
And then it has sort of a pump, an apple attractant in it, and when they eat it, it takes them out. Another thing that works on slugs is a diatomaceous earth. It has microscopic particles that are very abrasive, and when the slug goes over it, it ruptures the the cell walls, and they kind of bleed to death.
So that works better than eggshells, probably, is what you're saying.
It's called diatomaceous earth.
Okay, I have that written down. I appreciate that.
But the beer thing, you know, I that's a real good one, but I have a hard time with that because the beer disappears between the house and the pie plate.
Okay, so keep at it with either the bait under the leaves or the diatomaceous earth.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Mike in Oshkosh, we're up to you next. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I've been beating this to death here locally in Oshkosh, and I'm looking for a different answer. Sycamore trees in Wisconsin, the Oshkosh areas, I've been thinking that they grow very well in the south, and thinking long-term global warming and everything. Any thoughts on that, and do you have them at your bare root locations?
No, we don't have sycamore, and sycamore are extremely borderline. And I wouldn't count on the global warming thing making it warm enough for sycamore trees. They're beautiful trees. The bark is just unbelievable.
Yeah, fabulous.
What usually happens with them, you can get them through the first couple winters. You have a reasonable chance, but they start dying back a little bit, and then you get a hard winter, and then it takes the tree out. So,
there's a couple of very large ones on UWO campus.
Right, and they were probably transplanted as pretty big trees. I mean, if you're going to try it, a bare root tree is not what you want to try starting with. What you want to try starting with is a bald and burlap tree that has some size to it so the plant can get established that first winter or the first summer. Because the thing that will make or break that tree is whether it's able to establish itself far enough ahead so that the winter, the first winter, doesn't take it out.
You have the bald and burlap by chance?
I don't think so.
Okay, thanks much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Someone phoned in with a suggestion on poison ivy patches, and that is that goats will take care of a poison ivy patch. Apparently they're not bothered by poison ivy. And there are actually people who will rent goats out to handle that.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
That's the first time I've heard that, too.
That's the first time I have, too. Barbara in Emerald, your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Hello, thank you.
Sure.
I have a 100-year-old yellow transparent graft on a rootstock.
Okay.
And they tell me to keep it tender, keep it babied over the winter. Well, how do I do that, and how do I keep mice from eating it if I keep it outside, or should I keep it in the basement?
You're talking about an apple tree?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why don't you plant it outside?
All right, and then how do I keep it over the winter babied?
Well, the yellow transparent is a hardy tree. It should be all right outside. I mean, if you're worried about mice and things like that, you just wrap the tree or spray it with a repellent.
Okay.
And the same way with deer. There are repellents that you can spray the tree in late November, early December, after the danger of rain is there, that will keep the deer from eating it. It's actually a fungicide that makes the taste bitter to the deer, so they stay away. So it would be relatively difficult to overwinter an apple tree inside, apple trees do require a dormancy period. You can't bring it into the house because the dormancy period would not be fulfilled. You'd have to pot it and put it in a garage or something, and then protect the ball of soil so that the root system doesn't die. I would think you'd have a better chance outside than inside.
Okay, and the bottom part is the rootstock, and it's sending out little shoots. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, you take a pruning shears and you cut those off as close to the trunk as possible, because you don't want the rootstock to grow. Because if that grows, then the yellow transparent might be overtaken. So if you've got shoots coming from below the graft where the tree is budded or grafted, you want to take those off.
And should I paint them?
And that way the strength of the tree will be forced into the area above the graft so that yellow transparent grows.
I'd prune them off.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. Dennis in Plymouth, your turn now. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, thanks for calling.
I got a question for you guys about currant bushes. I'll give you a little history about the currant bush briefly. A neighbor had given us a couple of currants as she dug them out, and the original plants were planted in 1908.
Okay.
And she kept them under a strict organic nature. And today I just noticed that they got some raising red bumps on them and yellow spots, and I was just pruning off that kind of growth. But wondering if you guys could help me identify that and what I could do about it for preventative.
The raised red buds? I've seen it. I mean, I've seen it on currants, and I'm not so sure that it isn't a natural part of the plant.
Oh, I see.
That's the way they grow. Again, I'd have to look that up, but I've seen those raised. It's like a corky type growth that comes from between the bark, right?
No, this is actually on the leaves.
Oh, it's on the leaves. Okay, that is a gall. That's an insect-sided gall, and it's not going to hurt the plant. There's nothing you can do about it once it's there. The way that you'd prevent it is to use a dormant spray, oil and lime sulfur, before the plant starts to grow. That would clean up any of the insects that are in the area. But it's just aesthetic more than anything else.
Okay, yeah, they mean a lot to us. Yeah. She recently passed away, and
it's not going to hurt the plant. It's just aesthetic. The insect. What happens is the insect feeds on the leaf. It injects their saliva into the leaf, and it forms a gall. The cells just start to proliferate, and that's all it is. It's just a growth.
Okay. Well, thank you guys very much. You relieved my panic.
All right, Dennis. Thank you for calling. And let's go to Dee in Kenosha next. Hi, Dee.
Oh, hi. I have a quick question. For Mother's Day, we told my mother-in-law we would plant a new tree in her side yard where she can see it from her kitchen window.
Okay.
Full sun, good drainage, and she would like a flowering crab.
Okay.
Are we getting too far out to plant one? We're thinking a pot grown.
Yeah, a potted tree is fine. In fact, even a bare root tree is fine yet.
Okay.
If it's dormant. Do you know what color she likes?
Oh, I have no idea. We're going to take her out and look for one.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's not too late for potted trees. And when you're planting a potted tree, when you take the tree out of the pot, you just have to make sure that the tree isn't too root-bound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there are a lot of roots around the edge of the pot, you just either rake the roots, like you use your fingers like a comb and pull the roots out so that they don't keep going round and round and round, or you just take a box knife or a one-inch razor blade and cut mm-hmm. into the root ball about an inch deep on four sides so that the roots kind of blast out of that pot area. Otherwise, they just keep going around, and the tree will get to be about 3 or 4 inches in diameter, and it'll start going downhill because the roots are strangling it. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's the only problem you have with a potted tree is to make sure that you don't keep it in a root-bound situation. But you can actually plant containerized nursery stock anytime during the year.
Oh, I never realized that.
Oh, yeah, you can plant it all season long, right up until when it freezes, and
well,
anytime during the summer also.
Now, she may be gone part of the summer. She will be gone part of the summer. I'll go over there. What kind of, you know, watering and that is important the first year for one of these little trees?
It takes a 5-gallon bucket of water once a week if it's hot and dry. If you get rain, you don't have to worry about it. You don't want to water every day, every other day,
mm-hmm.
except when you first put the tree in. The first week, you want to keep it pretty wet because it has to get those roots out into the soil. But once the roots are into the soil, you 5-gallon bucket full once a week is plenty. And once the tree is growing, that's even not necessary unless you want to make the tree grow real well.
Well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot, Dee, for calling. And Christina in Glenwood City, you are up. Hi, Christina.
Hello there. I love hummingbirds, so I'm wondering which variety of honeysuckle vine flowers the longest.
Oh, boy. There are several different honeysuckles. There's one called the Gold Flame, and there's one called Scarlet Beauty. They're both a woody vine, actually. If you really want to see a lot of hummingbirds, the trumpet vine is another one that tracks them. That has the scarlet or the yellow trumpet vine. And when they're in flower, you can just kind of watch the hummingbirds come in and out.
Any tips about the care for each of these?
You put them in the ground and fertilize them and water them a little bit, and they start to grow.
Okay,
I mean, they're
terrific.
Very easy. They're very easy. And trumpet vine also, very easy to grow. They're really simple.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Laurel in Madison, I think, is up next. Hi, Laurel.
Hi. I received a tamarisk plant
or
small tree for Mother's Day. I have not put it in the ground yet. And a friend of mine Googled tamarisk, and the only thing that came up was a lengthy description of how invasive it is.
Is this the bush?
It's like a small tree. I would say it's about 2.5-3 feet tall. It looks like a stick at this point, has a little bit of greenery
like
beginning to come out.
Needly foliage on it?
It's not exactly needly.
Okay. It's very frilly. We have not found it invasive at all. There are some places that you can't plant it, but we have a variety that we sell that we've literally sold thousands of, and I have not noticed that it's invasive at all.
Wow. So that's the good...
I mean, there are places that they've restricted the growth of tamarisks, but, I've never seen it. I mean, I've never seen it come up any place but where you plant it. So, there are, if it's the tamarisks that I'm thinking about, there are some places that you can't plant it, but I've not seen it be, I mean, I've you know, travel quite a bit. I've never seen it where it's invasive. So,
so go online, take a look at www.jungseed.com, and you can probably find that right online.
Yes, you can.
Dick, thanks a lot for being with us.
Yes, thank you, Larry.
Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin. Stay with us. Lots in store.